that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
Tell Diligence that he's what the heck that could be. Okay, we'll assume it's friendly anyway, okay?
There's two of them, and they
state that
they've
actually
spotted
both
sides. They're
not
colored,
I can say that. Oh my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. What are we doing? Are you ready for this?
Said, what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular disc.
UFOs over New York, and I am too surprised.
Well, the thing is hovering sort of 100 yards away. I could have hit it with a brick if I thrown.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that the day's like...
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead. Doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning. Welcome to our listeners around the world to edition 358 of Strange Days Indeed. Tonight, veteran UFO researcher and author Richard Hall, and in our two, Brian Veich from up there in northern British Columbia, and as usual, Dave Ferlott with his take on it. And both Dave and Victor Vigiani are in studio with me tonight. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hello,
hello. An interesting week for you?
It's been a powerful week.
In more ways than several hundred thousand.
You bet.
In among all of that insanity that's been going on down there.
Can you believe it?
Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. And having been to Nolens and having had wonderful times there, I know you've been there too, Dave.
Yes. Beautiful.
It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
They finally got around to helping some people today.
Dimwit in the White House? No, surely not.
Let's get Air Force One and fly it over the devastated area.
Yeah, and look out of the window.
Have a look and see.
That's just endless with that man, isn't it?
A lack of leadership, a failure of leadership overall.
Total incompetency. Another reason to impeach the man.
Never happened, though.
No, he's got too many friends. And they're probably listening tonight.
Lurking in the background here, the pilot and master control is Big Daddy B, and flying CJAD-800 in Montreal is Jim Pacheco. Friday, August 26th, however...
Something happened?
Eyewitness KD spotted two UFOs flying over this here burg, downtown Toronto, and he reported to Joe Trainer of UFO Roundup. But he saw two objects, one after the other, with colored lights that beamed illumination every few seconds, as though the craft was changing its angle of attack. But they seemed to maintain a continuous height and speed. They were surrounded in a light haze, an aura similar to the one in Tasmania, and the many objects we have seen with that sort of halo around it, unless it was the pot lights on the top of the International Center of the CNE. August 26th. Yeah, well, the X was open by then. He said their estimated height was over 7,000 feet. The entire sighting lasted 2 to 3 minutes till the second object disappeared from his line of sight, flying over his building in the middle of downtown Toronto on Yonge Street. He was on his balcony, which faces south. He's always been a skeptic about UFO sightings, but he now knows for sure that what he saw were very unidentified.
Well, if that's his first experience with that kind of sighting, and for him to take the time to...
Email Joe Trainer.
Email and say, look, I've never believed before, I've never seen these, the bunk or whatever, and now I've seen something, and I'm a convert. Or at least there's something there that I know that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of thinking, I believe, is really important because people who go through this, and it's becoming more and more, although they say that number of sightings are down, but is that relevant? But people are still seeing things and taking the time to report them. And much like this individual here, I think that's a good news piece. I guess he's going to be sitting there looking at the skies a lot more often.
Victor Vigiani, you saw something strange early this evening?
Went out for dinner after the turmoil today with the tomatoes. And going into that.
Turmoil with the tomatoes. Putting up tomatoes is turmoil. Yeah.
Driving north on Highway 10, just above Lakeshore, about 7:51, because I looked at the clock in the car, I saw this incredible, call it for now a contrail, okay, going north under the lit sun, totally blue, bright sky, about 7:51 in the evening, and this thing is going directly north, and it looked like a long contrail. Eventually, the contrail disappeared. Usually, it takes time for them to dissipate. This thing just snapped out. And then the little ball of white light kept on going north, which was the reflection from the sun, obviously, onto whatever craft was up there. But the funny thing about it, the contrail was going on and off really quickly. It wasn't just a long contrail and then it dissipated. This thing went out. I saw it first. It eliminated itself very quickly. And then it went, this smaller thing went forward. And then the contrail built up again and then it disappeared. Did that three times as it proceeded to become just a white dot of light very, very far in the horizon, going directly north from us.
How fast was it going? Airliner speed?
That may be faster. You know, an object coming towards you seems to be standing still as does an object going away from you. And this seemed to be kind of standing still, but going, and I placed it with a set of
power lines.
Power lines, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was moving above to begin with, went between the lines, and then got below it. So it's obvious it was going very quickly north, very, very quickly, away from you. And that's to go displaced that way and that with that amount of speed, it looked like it was really, really moving.
Any sense of the height, the altitude?
Oh, my goodness. I would have figured it had to be 30,000 feet or more because way, way up there.
Does air alternate hot and cold?
Yeah, degrees of, as, in altitude. Yeah.
In altitude?
Mm-hmm. So maybe if it was going up.
If it was climbing and going through layers of hot and cold air, then the contrail would have
lasted less time.
Yeah.
Well, as it gets colder and it gets hotter, it would last more time.
Well, yes, but if you're flying through cold air and you're climbing and you climb into cold air, then you get a contrail.
Right.
And if you go above that and there's warm air up there, then you wouldn't see a contrail.
That's right. It would dissipate. Yeah. So that's...
But stopping suddenly.
Very quickly. It was like it was there. It's like a little elastic would be unfolded back into the little white, and the light was extremely bright. I've never seen an aircraft fly that directly north, usually going over the house by the airport or whatever, and they're going south. This one's going directly north in a very, very different flight path that I'm used to seeing around the house. That could be because of the air show.
Yeah, but it's 7 o'clock in the evening.
7:51, right. They would have landed and be bedded down for the evening, for sure. But it was a bizarre little thing. I wouldn't call it a UFO, but I don't know what it was.
Yeah, I wonder if anybody else saw it.
Yeah, that would be interesting. If you saw that tonight, I'd really like to corroborate.
If you've seen something like that and you figured out what it is, because we're puzzled, 1-866-866-7387.
Here with his take on it, with Dave Furlong.
Why are people so interested in UFOs when there are so many things going on around us that are much more important? Things like the war in Iraq, the war on terrorism, national disasters like Hurricane Katrina, and the devastation in New Orleans are all much more important than the stories of these UFO things flitting around our planet, aren't they? Nope, I don't think so. Don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to trivialize the importance of events like Hurricane Katrina or the war on terrorism. They are very significant, and helping our fellow humans is more important than anything else that we are to do. But what many people fail to realize is that UFOs are not something that just happened in the 40s and the 50s or something that we've been able to easily identify. UFOs have been going on for decades, and if we are to think about events from our recorded past, even centuries and millennia. There have been UFO sightings recorded on every continent on this planet. Every country in the world has experienced people seeing things that they cannot readily identify. People from all walks of life, including professionals trained in observation techniques, and country leaders have reported seeing UFOs. In many ways, UFOs are the common quotient among all of us that live on this tiny mud ball in space. People of every race, creed, and color have experienced seeing UFOs and in some instances have reported seeing and interacting with the occupants or pilots that fly the craft. Another thing that we fail to realize is that UFOs are international. They don't recognize any borders or sovereignty of any nation. They don't belong to any government or nation that we're familiar with. They don't see any difference between a native tribesman in Africa or the president of the United States. UFOs are a source of ongoing argument because there are people who do nothing other than worry about trying to debunk the reports of UFOs, and unfortunately they find people who shoot enough holes in their debunking reports to make them resemble Swiss cheese. At a rough estimate, for every 4 UFO reports that can be easily explained away, there is at least one that nobody can offer any reasonable explanation. We also have a choice when it comes to UFOs and all the reports that go on around them. We can ignore them and worry about only what is happening on the planet, or we can go on investigating everything we can find out about them in an attempt to determine what and who they are. At this very moment in time, we don't know enough about UFOs and their occupants. We don't know if they're invaders, colonists, friends, enemies, or simply visitors. We don't know if they're after scientific knowledge or our strawberry ice cream recipe. All we do know is that there are far too many reports of UFOs to completely ignore them. We can't catch them with our existing technology, we can't hurt them with our current weaponry, and we can't even communicate with them. Until one of those 3 events can take place, we have to concentrate on learning everything we can about them, because if we do ignore them and try to go on with our lives, we might end up waking up someday to find ourselves being the slave workforce for some new leader. Are the current events in our world more important than UFOs and everything that surrounds them? Because of the international and historical nature of the entire UFO phenomenon, I would say that they are not. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange things, indeed.
Yes. You know what? It sounds like he thinks there's something to this.
Well, do you think so? Do you, Dave?
Yeah, well,
just a guess.
Well, that's a pretty good guess, guys.
You think that there really are UFOs and that they're real?
Oh, I know there's UFOs. I know there's UFOs.
Very well stated.
Talking about governments knowing, mm-hmm. The Globe and Mail today. UFOs are real, but the Tories are acting. Page A5, the Ottawa Notebook, Jane Tabor, the opener of her column, Another World. Paul Hellyer has been a liberal and a conservative, has run for the leadership of both parties and founded 2 more, and will announce this month that he believes UFOs exist. Yes, indeed, the 82-year-old former defense minister in Lester Pearson's government is to address the Toronto Symposium on UFO Disclosure and Planetary Directions at the U of T's Convocation Hall on September 25th. My role is really to say publicly for the first time that I believe that what we call unidentified flying objects are real, he said, and that people should know more about them and some of the implications of the fact they exist and that they've been observing our planet for more than half a century now. Yesterday, he said he has never seen a UFO, and he had remained unconvinced of their existence until quite recently. In fact, as defense minister, he's known for controversially unifying the armed forces, Mr. Hellyer said he received reports of UFO sightings but didn't pay much attention to them. Lately, however, his reading on the subject and other evidence, has him convinced that they do exist, and he says that this has policy implications for the government, but will not reveal what he thinks they are. He said he doesn't want to scoop himself. Stay tuned. Nice one, Jane Tabor, in the Globe and Mail today.
A very interesting piece.
Mm-hmm.
When will you ever hear a national minister of defense from anywhere?
Former national minister
That's right.
of defense.
Mm-hmm. Come forward and begin to at least talk about that kind of stuff.
But as he says, when he was in office as the Minister of Defense,
he got
the reports, but he didn't read them. And now, in his, 82nd year?
And I must say that in my meetings with him in preparation for the conference, this man is incredibly articulate and very, very well spoken, and has a breadth of knowledge and the confidence with which he exudes. You can tell, you know, when someone's been in government like that, they have this air about them. A professional golfer, if you've ever watched a professional tournament live, you see the steely-eyed kind of glare and glance, and they're focused on their profession completely. This is the kind of look that you get from Paul Hillier when you talk to him about this. He just sits back and says, listen, folks, this is what I believe. And he does a very, very good job of convincing you that not only does he believe it, he's been through a lot.
It'd be interesting to find out about some of those reports, too.
He's reading on the subject and other evidence.
That other evidence.
You said that twice now.
I know. There are a couple of suggestions there. Interesting implications. And just before Richard Hall joins us, this is Jim out there in Mississauga. Jim, good evening.
What a coincidence. I walked in the door, I turned on the radio, and I heard the comment about Paul Hillier. I cannot believe he's finally said something. I've been talking to him over the years after you asked me to make contact with you.
Yes.
Remember what he told me? He said, the less you know about it, the better it is. But if Star Wars goes up in the United States, you'll know it. I've never forgotten that statement from him.
And he's going to be speaking at the symposium here on the 25th of this month now. Were you aware of that, Jim?
No, I was not aware of it. See, he belongs to the men's club, and the men's club doesn't get back together until October. We take a break through the summer, and I haven't been talking to him since then.
For those of you just joining us, Paul Hillier is the former Minister of Defense under Pierre Elliott Trudeau back in the 60s and 70s, and we'll be talking at the upcoming symposium at Convocation Hall the 25th of this month, and that is thanks to you, Jim.
Well, thank you.
You made that connection for us. Thank you.
I know. I'll be talking to him now. I'll make contact with him. I'm going to try and make it there. I'm so delighted it came through, and, you know, this proves a fact that I've told many, many of my friends and relatives that you've got to have an open mind. Believe me. You don't believe it? That's fine. Have an open mind. And I think this is finally starting to come through. And I'm very... Talk about a coincidence, just walking in the door, Bruce.
The synchronicity of not only you mentioning that name way back when, I forget what show it was. Months ago. Now you walk in the front door and listening to our commentary about Mr. Hillier doing something at a conference. Talk about synchronicities, Jim. That's amazing.
It is.
Jim, I want to thank you for all of your help, but we need to move on, okay? Always happy to hear from you. Look forward to meeting you at the conference. Come up and certainly introduce yourself to Victor. You'll recognize him. He'll be up there on stage introducing people, presumably.
Thanks, gentlemen. Have a great night. I've enjoyed the program all these years. I haven't missed it.
Thank you, Jim.
You're quite welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Now, after serving in the fledgling UFO force, oh dear, the U.S. Air Force, Richard Hall volunteered in 1947. He enrolled at Tulane University in New Orleans in 1954. Originally a mathematics major, he tired of math and switched to a major in philosophy and a minor in mathematics. Now, remember these dates, folks. Attracted by then emerging news about sightings of flying saucers in the 1950s, he opted to make himself available to the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, NICAP, then being formed. After working for NICAP for about 10 years, Richard Hall resigned to find honest, i.e. paying, work because of impending marriage. And for a number of years thereafter, he worked for various trade associations in Washington, D.C., and for some Beltway Bandit consulting firms as a writer-editor. His final formal job before semi-retirement was as an abstractor indexer at Congressional Information Service in Bethesda, Maryland for about 10 years. Richard Hall has served as chairman of the Fund for UFO Research from 1993 to 1998 and is the author of several books, including The UFO Evidence and The UFO Evidence Volume 2, a 30-year report, and also Uninvited Guests. He was selected to be listed in Marquis's Who's Who's in the East. Currently, he's a part-time abstractor indexer for a Washington, D.C. consulting firm that manages an online database for the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism of the National Institutes of Health. He's also a founding member of the Church of Equine Velocity and holds the title of Magister Velocitatis Equinae. Richard Hall has begun consulting on a UFO documentary film for movie theater release. The theme will be a UFO cover-up and whistleblower testimony. Joining us on the phone, possibly for one of the last times, as he's gradually withdrawing from active participation in the UFO field, is one of my ufological heroes, Richard Hall. Good evening, Dick. Hello, Richard. All that build-up and he's gone.
Into the equine ether.
What happened there? Oh, my. We're having another one of those strange gremlins in the works nights tonight, aren't we?
It sounds like it, but the qualifications of this man, I'm sitting here...
Astounding.
I'm in awe.
This 1947, he joined the fledgling United States Air Force.
Which you mistakenly call the UFO Air Force. Which is a great slip. I really got to congratulate you on that one.
I'm not sure how that happened.
But that's amazing that he should pick up on things that far back.
An amazing lifetime body of work.
And
when you think about
it. We're talking half a century or so, close to that or more.
Very close to 50 years worth.
And to stay with it that long. And I know a lot of people who've been into it. Do you remember Michael Lindemann?
Yes, of course.
I used to enjoy listening to that man speak. And then he just came on a show and then just said, you know what? I've had enough. So he, I wouldn't say gave up on it, but I think got tired of the pressure of trying to put forward an idea that gets stomped on a constant basis, and he just backed away. And there have been a few other individuals who have done that. Mm-hmm. And Richard Hall has stuck with it.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of people have gone. Dennis Stacey was the editor of the MUFON Journal. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who have just quit or died.
And gave up in the cause.
And Richard Hall has done neither. And I think we got Richard on the line again. Hello, Dick.
Hello there.
I just gave you a 4.5 minute intro.
It was brilliant, Richard. It was absolutely brilliant.
Thanks and good night.
it's been good. Thank you for your wonderful lifetime work. How are you doing, Richard? It's been a while since we talked.
Oh, I'm doing very good, health-wise.
Oh, good. That's good to hear. Yeah, and unfortunately, you're still having to bang it out thanks to Enron.
Yeah, that's bottom line. That's about it.
Yeah, a lot of people lost their pensions in Enron, and unfortunately, Richard Hall was one of them. It's just appalling. Again, inactivity by the White House. Nothing done about that.
Mm-hmm.
Billions of dollars disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
The man is a dimwit down there.
Oh, he's got
a complete incompetent.
Now, he's got a long way to go before he gets to be incompetent.
You're involved in a UFO documentary that's going to play in theaters.
Yes, just gotten started in the past several months, and then they put it on hold for a while. They're going to start shooting film sometime early next year is the latest that I've heard about it. I've been doing some consulting on it, and this, of course, is quite different from TV documentaries for theater, release, and that could be different.
I think the last UFO documentary that was done for the theater was Rod Serling, wasn't it?
I'm not even sure when the last one was. It's been so long.
It was at least 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah, there have been very few of them.
When you say very different, presumably you mean much better?
Yes, primarily I mean that. I have pretty low opinion of most of the 95 to 99% of made-for-TV things are pretty poor. But this one has some good people who want to present the cases, the positive side of things, and that's all too rare. Usually it's just a little of this, a little of that, and then let the skeptics debunk everything, and good night, folks.
But, it's just... There are a couple of good UFO documentary makers here up in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Mike McDonald and Paul Kimball out on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. Paul Kimball's starting on a new one, which I'm going to be involved in, too.
Oh, good.
Yes.
They're keeping you busy, and as long as you are charging them a handsome buck for it.
No, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
That's one thing. They never have a penny, to pay you anything.
I know. And sometimes
I have talked some outfits into paying me the money, or I wouldn't cooperate. I just got tired of it because I was going bankrupt and getting deeper in debt. So I refuse to do it anymore anyway on general principles, but if I do like the sound of one, then I at least would ask him for some money. But I'm not asking Paul for any money. I think he's on the right track.
Having been involved in a few documentaries because of what I do here in Toronto on the radio and in Montreal, I've done a few documentaries, haven't seen hiding a hair of a copy of them.
Now, I'd like to know what compels you, Richard, to accept these kinds of challenges without any kind of monetary remuneration. You must have a passion for this that goes beyond that.
I've been at it for close to 50 years, and I have a strong conviction about it, and I've spent a good part of my life, you might say wasted a good part of my life, dealing with this thing. And I've had my moments along the way where I did get paid a little here and there, but on balance, I spent a lot more than I ever got paid. So just one of those things.
Yeah.
And these documentary people always are working on very low budgets and can't afford to pay you, quote unquote. So
it's amazing that they ever get the documentaries made. They make so little money.
Do you feel that the impact that they will be having in the future on the horizon will be a little bit more significant? The kind of impact that might have been made, say, 5, 8, 10, 12, 15 years ago?
Well, I think they need to get straight. The formula that they use is just pitiful, in my estimation. And the producers seem to be all hung up on artwork for its own sake, and they show fake photograph after fake photograph that just to decorate the screen. And knowledgeable people say, uh-oh, look at that junk. And then they're treating a serious case, and they don't tell the viewer what they're looking at. I just watched one of the current ones and on History Channel in the U.S., and they didn't identify anything. They were doing good cases, but they're doing a lousy job of presenting them. You couldn't tell what the evidence was. You couldn't tell whether it was a reconstruction, a real film, or what it was. And that's just pitiful.
It's really unfortunate because it leaves the viewer puzzled as to what it is that the viewer is seeing.
Yeah.
And I've seen it in so many documentaries, is that Carp Guardian landing footage, and that keeps popping up all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
There's never a description of it, or there's never a disclaimer, nothing.
That's just because it's sexy.
It has sizzle.
And that's exactly the way those people think, unfortunately. I'm generalizing. There may be 5% of them that have some brains. But
are you familiar, Richard, with the Brian Gumbel special on the Kecksburg incident?
Oh, yes.
And now, I thought that particular piece of work was fairly well handled in terms of him getting to the community and speaking to people and looking at both sides of what's going on.
Much more than average, that's true. There are exceptions, there's no question about that. I'm talking about more about the ones that sort of routinely appear on cable channels. And unfortunately, the last ABC Peter Jennings special wasn't much better.
The first hour was kind of okay. It was interesting. The last hour just sucked.
And then there was the last 3 minutes, or last 2 minutes, with the scientist.
Monsieur Kaku, the
blowing
last
everything
few
away.
Seconds. Yeah. I guess you've seen a lot of changes in UFO research, and a lot of them not for the better, Richard Hall.
That's true. A lot of changes in the events of UFOs themselves, too. By the way, I had a very interesting email today from one of your listeners who asked this question. He knew I was going to be on the program. He asked whether I'd learn more about human nature or about extraterrestrials in the time I've spent on the subject, which I thought was an interesting question. And not to quibble too much about whether you should treat this as extraterrestrial or some other variant, I think I've probably learned more about human nature than I have about whatever is behind this phenomenon, because I've dealt with everything from outrageous skeptics, debunkers, nasty people, the Washington Press Corps, which can be very, very tough, all the entire range of people in the UFO field. So, you know, you learn about human nature and people and all the things that interest them and don't interest them and that sort of thing. But meanwhile, we've learned a lot about the phenomenon. We just don't have any really ultimate answers.
What's your gut instinct about it? Do you think we're going to find out, or are we just going to stumble along in the dark for several more generations?
Well, that sort of depends on them, assuming we're dealing with intelligent beings of some kind. That's my feeling about it, that I don't think we're going to learn much from our rather feeble efforts on this end. It will take one of the major sighting waves of the past, something really spectacular, to happen, and then they can't contain it anymore, and it comes out. That would have to be something pretty spectacular, apparently, because the subject has been so trivialized and exploited and all that. It has to be something pretty obvious. And then that could be quite traumatic. So I'm not sure I want that to happen.
I really want to find out, but I'm not sure that I'll really like the answer.
But you really want to know.
Yeah, one of the little questions, don't want something too much, you just might get it.
That's right.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for.
Yes.
Do you, like some researchers, feel that governments know a lot more or have known a lot more, or certain departments of government have a pretty good idea of what's been going on over the last 50 years?
Well, that's something that I've studied a great deal and know quite a bit about, and I think there is very clear evidence that the United States government has withheld a lot of very significant evidence, like radar scope photographs and hardcore intelligence data. But whether they know ultimate answers any more than we do is still questionable.
Yeah, they could be just as confused as we are.
Yes, and that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of confusion about this, and the military here has come to the conclusion several times that we were dealing with extraterrestrials, and they got shot down by the scientists and the Congress or the public, whatever. But mainly scientific skeptics have put the kibosh on the subject here. And then after a while, what's the military going to do? They keep saying, these are real, we're having serious problems with it, and they keep getting shot down. The next thing you know, they say, well, we're wasting our time, we'll debunk it.
Richard Hall is the author of three books, if you're at all interested in UFOs, flying saucers, call them what you will. And there are three books that you really should grab yourself copies of. The UFO Evidence and the UFO Evidence Volume 2. Volume 2 is subtitled A 30-Year Report. And the third book, Uninvited Guests. If you buy no other books, go out and get those.
Do you lump NASA in with the government as well as part of the cover-up?
NASA, they've never had a whole lot to do with the subject. They were asked to under Jimmy Carter's administration and sort of declined. There was an ex-Air Force general employed by them who put out the word, no, this is nonsense, don't take it on. So they've never had any deep involvement. I don't buy into these videos that are floating around that they claim there's a big NASA cover-up. I don't accept that. I know people that work at NASA. I live right near Goddard Space Flight Center. I just don't believe that.
So you don't think that they're holding anything back
on
us?
Not NASA, no. CIA has a lot of material, finished intelligence reports, which you can find mentions of in their own documents. And they have radar scope photographs, and they have all these kinds of things. And, of course, there's a whole collection of films that have been taken over the years. These have been withheld all along, and I'm sure they're in some CIA vault somewhere.
I'd like to put something to rest one way or another with you. This whole question of the other side of the moon. There's been some documentation that there's structures that orbiting moon craft have taken of structures on the other side of the moon. What's your view on that?
I don't have any particular knowledge of that. I've never heard anything other than these stories that get floated around on some of these videotapes.
No, I just think it's a rather intriguing item of our business that we have to deal with one way or another.
Yeah.
Just,
some intriguing things, of course, on Mars that we don't know enough about, but then you get wild advocates that overinterpret them. So, you know, I think we need to take a closer look at these things scientifically.
That's one of those wild dreams, isn't it?
What, that there would be something done scientifically?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I suppose it is, yeah.
Yeah. That's been the complaint all along, all of these years. Nobody's willing to...
Well, the scientists succeeded in debunking it, and any time a scientist or two or three get interested, then their colleagues laugh them out of the room.
Although Michio Kaku is an interesting ally.
Yes.
And his name comes up a fair bit on this program.
Yes.
He closed the Jennings.
He was one of the few bright spots in the Jennings program.
Yeah, even if, what was it he said? Even if one of these UFO reports is correct, then it's something worth looking into.
Yes, he's advocated looking at it scientifically. But that's not going to happen anytime soon, I'm afraid. There are other things happening that are worth mentioning. You know, Wendy Connors is on your program fairly often.
Yes.
She's done marvelous work with her audio histories. Well, there's a new project in the works. She did a couple of years ago very lengthy interviews with me on digital format video, state-of-the-art stuff for an oral history. And there's 7, 8, 10 hours. I don't know. I lost track. She really grilled me. And we're going to try to do something with that. I don't know. I'm going to try.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
Try to market it, and then need somebody to do some editing because it's just raw interview at this point. So I need somebody
Wonderful.
Knowledgeable of that technology to do some editing.
I know that there are a couple of such people on the UFO updates email list. So perhaps if you post to the list and we'll see what transpires.
Sure, I'll do that. I'll spell it out in more detail there.
Why would you want to edit them down with the capacity of DVDs nowadays? Just put it out in the raw.
This is a video.
Mm-hmm.
Could be converted, I suppose.
Yeah, but you can get 6 hours of video on one DVD disc and a blank DVD is penniless.
Well, see, that's where I need the technical help. But if anybody wanted to listen to me for 7 or 10 hours, they must not have a life. So.
I'd gladly do it.
You know, I can think of the Lembergs and the Velezes and the Bill Webbers. I mean, there's a lot of them out there.
All it takes is one rainy Saturday afternoon, Richard. That's all it takes.
That's right.
I do have a lot of knowledge without any false modesty here because I've been at it a very long
yes,
time.
Yes, you have.
And
yes.
I do have things to say, and I would like to get it out. And so we'll work on that. That's a worthy project.
Yeah,
I'm not totally out of the field. I still maintain a very strong interest. Just I simply can't afford to be very deeply involved. I have to scrabble around to get some paying work.
Yeah, somebody needs a kick in the slats somewhere. Here's an email from Wendy Connors. Hey, Dick, I'm listening. Use my name in vain, my friend, she says.
I told her that I was going to use her name in vain if I got the chance.
And you did it well.
Yes. Richard Hall, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
For everything.
All right. Bye-bye.
Good night. Do yourselves a favor, go to virtuallystrange.net and click Strange Days Indeed, and tonight's program listing, click Richard's name, and it'll take you to hallrichard.com. Richard has been into many different things, a lot of which are listed on his website, and there's a lot of interesting reading there. And then order a book from him. It will help him a lot.
And the site reads so well.
Mm-hmm.
It's so clean and easy to move through.
I've
been looking at it over the past couple of days.
That's what he does. He's right.
And he writes so succinctly.
Yes.
Beautiful, Ray.
Yeah. Let's go up to Houston, British Columbia. He heads up HBCC, Houston, British Columbia, Canada, UFO Research. Joining us on the line is Brian Vike. Good evening, Brian.
Good morning, Earl.
you had a snooze before the program, eh?
I did. I had a nap for a couple hours.
What'd you have for breakfast?
Oh, potatoes, carrots, and a hamburger patty. And I really did for breakfast.
Yeah, but you're a woodsman, so...
I keep up my strength for winter coming.
Yes. You've been a busy man again lately, haven't you, Brian Vike?
Yeah, seems to be pretty busy. I got, June was a little slow, and July here I did that little speaking tour, and then when I got back from that, holy moly, the reports, there was a lot of reports, and in August just went wild. I brought in 108 reports for August alone I brought in. And then I don't know how many got from John Hayes, their UFO info. I mean, he sent over, must have been about 30 or 40 anyway, or more. So, yeah, it's been busy. No question about it.
And how come that's happening, do you suppose?
Having a clue. Pretty weird. Like, January started off really hot this year for 2005, and then, you know, slowly went down. I think I brought in around 100 or just a hair under in January, and then it slowly went down, maybe 60, 70, down to 40, and then kept creeping around a little bit. And in June, oh, boy, did it die. Oh, it was bad. Reports came in, but it was just slow. And then we had this big whap of reports coming in from every part of the country and world you can think of, and now it seems to slow down. Mind you, it's a long weekend, too, just starting.
And I want to point out to people that although you're up there in northern British Columbia, your website and the reports coming in to you are coming in, as you say, from all over the world. You started off just being the northern British Columbia guy, and you become like a Peter Davenport or George Filer. You have stuff coming in from all over.
Yeah, it is really wild. I mean, you know, it's funny, there's a reporter down to the house here this week, and they're doing an article on me out of the newspaper in Smithers, and he says, well, how does a guy get so much? Because he's really into this UFO stuff, and he watches it, so he wants to do this article. So he says, how does a guy way in the heck up in Houston, 2,600 people, get to the point where he's getting, you know, receiving so much? And I said, heck if I know. I haven't got a clue. I don't know how it happened. I honestly don't know. I got a call yesterday and I did a show out of Idaho Springs, Colorado for half an hour. They're really getting around, it seems, you know. But, I mean, there's so much coming in. If somebody was interested in a report for a certain area, they'll go and type it in, look it up. And there's a good chance, not always, of course, but there's a good chance my name's going to pop up. I've ever seen something from somewhere close by.
Basically, you're just like me. When I started the UFO updates email list, all there was news groups out there, and they were unmoderated, and it was chaos for the UFO researchers to be able to talk quietly among themselves, along with the seriously interested civilians. I just found that little hole there and plugged it, and it's grown. I mean, it's amazing. I'm averaging 17, 18,000 reads a day at the archive.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is colossal.
Heck of a lot. Mm-hmm. Amazing amount of people.
Yeah. It seems to feed all kinds of other resources in the field.
And, you know, too, it's really interesting, and I think more and more people, as the years go along or months or whatever, is getting more interested in this because they're hearing a little more of it all the time. And I think a lot of times if people don't get too stupid with this stuff, I think more people will take an interest, too.
How do you distinguish between people when they're going off the deep end with this stuff, as you say, or stuff that seems to be of substance? How do you make distinctions, or do you just report everything?
No,
I'm not.
You see some of the stuff I got.
You must obviously edit, of course.
You bet you I do.
How do you make those distinctions?
First of all, you look at it, and we're talking about something that's just absolutely bizarre and just ridiculous, you know, and it's pretty evident that somebody's joking around, or if they are being serious, I'm not taking it serious, I can tell you that. The material that they're sending sometimes is just completely out there. Like, I mean, I couldn't even possibly take it serious. I'm pretty level-headed and open-minded and everything else. It's not even like an amazing, amazing story. It's just plain stupid.
Give us a quick example of one of those you don't post.
Well, I don't know if I mentioned this one. I might have mentioned it on the air where the blue beam of light shot through her patio window and it started, opened up her drawer and started fondling her underwear. That kind of stuff.
Okay.
And then the guy up north there who gave me a handwritten 34, 36 pages of aliens stealing his A-track and it was Frank Sinatra, you know. So, you know, and that would be my way, too.
I could see that.
You know, so there's things I don't put on my site, and that's what I mean by the sort of completely out there sort of stuff. When I first got going on this stuff and got, you know, was really into it, well, I got to get there and check this out. This is 3 hours to get to Terrace to drive there, and it's 3 hours home, so you got a six-hour round trip. So after that, when I said, oh, my God. And then he hands me this whole whack of papers as I'm reading. Oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. And then another one was I went back up to Terrace. My wife came with me this time. We met at one of the restaurants, bought her lunch. And she says, I couldn't tell you over the phone, Brian. She says, I just couldn't do it. Just in case someone's listening. I thought, oh, God, maybe a little paranoia here or something. She says, okay, here we go. I'm sitting there, and I had my little pad thing open, ready to write down. And she says, well, she says, I woke up from a deep sleep. There was an alien standing beside my bed. It had a plexiglass visor. Poof, it was gone. And I'm still waiting. It was like dead air. I mean, you know, I'm waiting. Okay, what else? What else? What else? That was the story.
That was it.
And then she went on to tell me about how badly her family members have abused drugs, and which is sad. And then I thought, oh, my God, what am I getting myself into? And then I went up to Kitwan Cool, drove up there, spent overnight. It was getting towards fall. It was cool, especially up there, getting higher up. So I'm sat there, and, you know, and I was going to camp overnight. So I went up and seen this fella and his girlfriend. This guy, he's not a young fella. He's, you know, right into it. He's got a good job. He's a very well-educated man. I'm sitting out there and freezing out there because it's getting pretty nippy. We're sitting there, and he walks over towards the Skeena River, and he's standing there, and he's doing something. I said to his girlfriend, I says, well, what's he doing? He's preparing. I said, preparing for what? He says, well, he's preparing because the UFOs are going to go over really quick, and he's going to contact them. I sort of got this feeling that, hey, I should have stayed home where it was warm. He starts pointing out these UFOs that are going across the sky, and I says, no, I said, they're satellites. Everything that went over with satellites that he was seeing, and there's no way you could convince him. So that's the kind of material I don't bother putting in the site. And I get a lot of it, really, believe it or not. Most of the stuff I get put up, I mean, I don't even care, to be honest with you, I don't care if it's something simple as a meteor going across the sky. If somebody's going to report it, I'm going to put it on the site, as long as it's not crazy or out there, you know. The way it is, I look at it. I've heard people say, oh, lights in the sky are not important. Well, to me, they're very important, really important. And the reason why I say that, because if it wasn't for the lights in the sky, for one of the cases I worked on here in BC, those lights in the sky, put those together, because they weren't just streaking across, they're doing a few weird things. Put them together with this one case, and I have all the other evidence, it made for a monster case.
We probably talked about that case on this program before, but fill us in on it again, Brian.
Well, it was, because you actually had her on. It was Karina from Kelowna. From the
right.
Case.
Yes, I remember that. Should go back and dig that out of the archive.
Yeah, it's absolutely an amazing case, and there was so much evidence. I mean, you know, the two women went outside of Kelowna, pulled over the side of the road. As they got out, pretty much everything started happening, and the lights came together, and, of course, they formed sort of this little triangle thing. But eventually, the thing came down and hovered over the highway ahead of them, big green, neon green light, you know. In other words, we got a craft. So, I mean, this is different from lights in the sky. But I was going to get to that. And, of course, they sit there watching. She said that she shone this light over. She could see Seth's eyes off to the side around these bushes. They were freaked out. When they reached for the handles of the door to get back inside, it felt like they were moving through quicksand. Everything slowed down. And then all of a sudden they jump in to try to start the vehicle, which was turning over, but it was just a little hard to start. Eventually it did, and she made a U-turn and went down. The light followed, and as it went down the road, now eventually it sort of disappeared. Her friend ended up saying, gosh, I'm tingly, sort of like I've been zapped with electricity or something like that. You know, if you touch a car battery, but not that big of a shock kind of thing. Just a tingling feeling. They knew what time they got there roughly. After midnight, and then all of a sudden, 45 minutes or roughly, time was gone. The next morning, woke up. Courtney's sitting there having coffee. Of course, she's already noticed. She'd ended up bottom of her foot, a great big bruise. Her sides here bruised, like sort of even finger marks on one of her breasts. So she was quite bruised. She wasn't feeling too great, of course. Our friend got up. She was in her nightgown. She had blood running out of her nose. Courtney grabbed a towel and helped her with that. And then they, you know, sort of got her into the shower to get cleaned up because she had, you know, blood on her nightie and all over. You know, they removed her nightie, I guess, and here she had this great big burn on her tailbone. Well, you know, things just went downhill, basically, after that. Karina was admitted to the hospital, hair loss, weight loss, all kinds of things. They did a battery of tests on her. Could never find anything wrong. Even CAT scans, you name it, they done it. Blood work of every sort still to this day. They can't figure out why. And I was just talking to her. And she's still having a lot of head pressure, a lot of weird things, and she's still going to the doctor over this.
It's almost like the Cash Lundrum case, isn't it?
It's very bizarre. But, you know, Earl, what I was getting at, although you have this kind of evidence in that, which we have photographs, I've got the medical records here, so I do have them. And this is before, now, I had posted this report. I am still writing this thing up. There was a whole massive wave of all kinds of sightings coming in from that whole area down there. People were seeing these green lights flying all over the place down there. Sure, it's a green light in the sky, could be a lot of things, but these green lights were also seen sitting over the highway, flying around and dropping out over the highway. It was weird. And 8 people reported it from different locations in Kelowna. So these lights can be important to a case. As long as they're not streaking across and that's it and it's gone, like a meteor, I don't mean that. Sometimes they are very important to maybe add to a case, to make it a really good one. And obviously it's good, but it's sad for the ladies they went through this. Bizarre.
And still going through it.
Started on the 22nd of July of 2003, and it went from cylinder splitting in half and people seeing this, one going this way, one going that way, round circle with wedge-shaped objects. They started flying out, witnessed by a grandmother, jets chasing something down Okanagan Lake. That was reported by one, and they ended up getting about 2 or 3 more who said they saw the same thing. And then there were still other sightings of different weird green lights flying around. Actually, one of them come down around the college in the daytime. I had well over 200 people. I talked to, we'll say, about 150 of them anyways, that were reporting this great big ball of light, the moon-sized thing, traveling down over the mountains, dropping into the valleys, making 90-degree turns over their heads, off the edge of their property, over the lakes. Low. We're not talking way up in the sky here. We're talking right down just above ground level at times. And then what followed as the thing went through was a beam of light, just like a fluorescent tube from horizon to horizon. Just sat in the sky for an hour. I got all those calls. I know the observatory got a crap load. I know the radio stations now, they were flooded with calls. So that was pretty major. And then right after that, they had the missing time event. A lot of sightings went on for maybe first week and week and a half in August, and then she died right off. But the interesting fact of that, too, is they had all those just terrible, terrible forest fires down there.
Right around that time.
Exactly. It actually started up just before, and then it really got heavy into the when they had the forest fire. So it's really, you know, it makes you do a lot of thinking.
These reports on your website, that whole sort of major thing that happened to the women?
Yeah. just go to a Google or whoever, type in missing time in Kelowna, hit search, and it'll come up with it, and just look for my site. An interview with Karina, missing time in Kelowna. Type that in. There's about an hour. There's two clips, half an hour each, and that's an interview with Karina I did not long ago. I had it before, but
now, that's K-A...
C.
Oh, C, okay.
Yeah, C-O-R-I-N-A.
Okay, C-O-R-I-N-A. And Kelowna, for those of you who don't live in Canada, K-E-L-O-W-A-N-A.
Yeah, so now you got me thinking. It's K-E-L-O-N-W-A. And I'll tell you, if you can go find it,
W-N-A.
It's some really good reading material, and you can listen to her interview.
There's just so much been going on there in the past, and good to refresh memories on Karina's case.
Yes.
We haven't even touched on the new stuff. Unfortunately, we're out of time,
Brian. No problem.
But it's always good having you on. Let's do it again real soon and catch up on some of the more recent cases.
Yep, because I got some real dandies for some real recent ones, too. So always a pleasure, Alton. Always kicking about if you need me.
Always need you, Brian. It's good that you're out there doing what you're doing. Go to Brian's website. A lot of interesting stuff to read there, stuff to watch, stuff to listen to. And that's hbccufo.org.
Yeah, and I just posted one here recently. It's brought me up to 3,101 items now on the site, so it's not bad since 2000, you know.
It's not bad for a beginner, is it?
Yeah, really, that's about it, yeah.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay, my friend. Thanks so much for having me. Thanks for your listeners, too.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Night-night. The man is amazing. Really is.
And he talks like it off the cuff.
It's like light the blue touch paper and stand back. He's like a rocket.
Like so many of the people in this field are just compelled.
What is that?
I can hear his voice.
And he's like that all the time.
Just consumed.
When he talks about this.
Must be something going on. There has to be.
I don't think so. Last week, Victor was talking about Senator Russell.
Senator Richard Russell.
Richard Russell,
from the United States. And, just a fascinating glimpse at someone of a stellar background in their own field.
He was in Russia on a train with his interpreter and his aide and saw something out of the window.
October 14th, 55, and he was there sitting watching out the window, and he saw a disc moving along with the train. He does identify as a disc, and some people will say they differ on that point of view, but he did describe it as a disc. As did his aide at the time. You know, they travel with these military aides from the military.
Attaches, yeah,
that's right,
yeah,
exactly. And they both saw exactly the same thing. And then that disc left, and at that point they had called the interpreter to come forward to see what was going on. And the interpreter came, saw nothing to begin with because the initial disc had just taken off up at ground level, we're talking. We're not talking way up. And then the interpreter saw another one take its place in this pacing the train. And they came back and they separately gave testimony. The CIA took the testimony. Why the CIA got involved, I'm not quite sure. That's a question.
Well, because it could have potentially been a Russian secret weapon or a secret aircraft.
Yeah. The bottom line is they were told, okay, thank you for your testimony, and we won't talk about it again. A journalist contacted Senator Russell several weeks after. The senator gave a very terse response that I've spoken to the proper people about this, and as far as we're concerned, the case is closed. I can't say any more about it, and left it at that. And that's where that particular case stands.
This was 1955 in Russia?
Actually, October 14th, 1955 in Russia.
Wow. I'm surprised as well that the KGB didn't get involved.
They may have, I don't know.
Through
what,
the interpreter, probably.
Oh, yeah, real fast.
Debriefed the interpreter. Well, maybe it was an American aircraft.
Yeah. I mean, the man was a former
tracing
chairman.
Tracing the pain.
Tracing the pain, yeah.
Yes.
Armed Forces Service Committee chairperson. He's got a stellar background. He ran for the candidacy of his party for the presidency. That didn't happen. But he was a well-respected senator and gave testimony, and it's just a really interesting case that is filled with facts and dates and observations that you might want to check out.
Dug up anything else on that one?
Nothing new at this point, no.
There was some discussion of it on Jan Aldrich's Project 1947.
Right, yeah.
Closed email list.
Okay, yeah.
It didn't seem to add anything to it. There were differing points of view.
It was probably this or probably that.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, unfortunately, none of us were there to establish the validity of what they saw. We weren't there.
Nevertheless, important enough for the CIA to pick up on it and debrief the United States senator.
Yeah. Why would a case like this become front and center? I've just been seeing it a little bit more and more often, and the more closely I look at it, I sense that there is something with the case that needs to be kind of elucidated more. And I don't usually hang my head on any one case.
But that was 50 years
yeah.
ago. The chances are relatively slim of getting anything on it. Unless the CIA decides that
right.
you declassify
yeah,
that.
Right. It's probably a road well-traveled.
Mm.
But sometimes these little gems kind of come back at you and have some sort of credibility. Just all part of the converging lines of evidence that we can seem to follow. And like as Brian says, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's out there that's really, really relevant and some isn't. And
yeah.
you just have to be able to distinguish.
It's actually amazing how many UFO researchers dismiss lights in the sky.
That's our starting point,
mm-hmm.
And you move on from
many
that.
More lights in the sky at night than there are mm-hmm. disks in the daylight.
Of course.
Oh yeah.
Well, there's just so much out there that you grab a hold of, and we just try to make sense of it. And as hard as we try,
yes, here we are sitting here going, we're trying to make sense of it, and shaking our heads and nodding our heads and bemused and bewildered by it.
And what is the final answer?
42.
Divided by what?
No. Just 42.
Just 42.
Now, what's the question?
How long is a piece of string?
Yeah, well, Douglas Adams maybe has found out. I don't know. We shall return next week. Thank you. Down to 1 second. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp.